This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
Hi, folks. Bob Main here with another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. This is episode 245, and I got some pretty cool stuff coming up for you. First of all, we're going to do an interview with Glenn Tate. I got Glenn back on the show. He is the author of the best-selling book series, 299 Days, a 10-book series of which 6 books are already released. He also knows quite a bit about firearms. He trains a lot with firearms. He owns a lot of firearms, and that's part of the prepping that he does, as it should be a part of it. Not all of it, but it should be a part of it. So I asked Glenn to talk about guns for preppers. And that's pretty much the main topic of this episode. I have some things that I want to add after he is finished about a certain type of pistol, about M&P pistols. Some things that weren't covered in the recent episode that I did with Ben Branham. But before we get into that, let's go ahead and get right into the interview with Glenn Tate. Well, joining me on the show again is Glenn Tate. Glenn, welcome back.
Well, thanks for having me. Always love being on.
Yeah, it's great. I haven't had you on in a while. And for people who are just now discovering my show, Glenn's a best-selling author. The book series, 299 Days. Book 6 is out. I think the sales have kind of gone beyond your expectations, haven't they?
Oh, my goodness, Bob. Wildly beyond my expectations. I wrote it thinking no one would read it, not because I thought it was bad, just because how many people think that they'll write 10 books and call one publisher and that publisher will say, I'd like to publish all 10 books, and then they'll sell really, really well for a while there. I think I was telling you this a while ago in June. I don't know if it's still true, but in June I was beating Tom Clancy on Amazon in the war fiction. By the way, I don't think these books are war fiction, but whatever, the Amazon brains figured it was war fiction. I was actually ahead of Tom Clancy, which I'm speechless. And so, yeah, it's wildly exceeded my expectations, which makes it even better, because if I was arrogant and thought that I was entitled to this, then I would be kind of ho-hum about it, but instead I'm relishing it. So it's been amazing, amazing journey.
Well, they're awesome books, and, you know, I can't say enough about it. Your writing style is awesome, and people really relate to it. And, you know, I'll cover that more later in the show. But, Glenn, I wanted to get you on to talk about guns, since this is the Handgun World podcast. I want to talk about guns from a prepper aspect. What do you think of that?
Oh, heck yeah. That's two things I love, guns and prepper stuff, and you're combining the two. So that's an awesome topic.
All right, so what do you recommend? Let's say somebody, you know, well, let's back up a minute. I did a show on survival guns a long time ago, like over a year ago, and I kind of threw my two cents in there, but for guns for preppers and survivalist type folks, what do you recommend? What do you like to encourage people to get and to train with?
Yeah, first of all, get things that they can afford and not go into debt. We've talked about that, but it's an important thing. Sometimes people get emotional and run out and buy guns that maybe they can't afford. But it depends on where you live, of course. You know, I'm a lawyer in real life, and the answer is always it depends, right? That's why people hate lawyers. But one of the reasons, right? No, you send somebody a big bill, and you say it depends, and then they really hate you. But anyway.
That's right.
It depends, you know, if it's an urban setting, a suburban setting, or a rural setting. I think that in an urban or suburban setting, I'm a big fan of a handgun first. There's a big debate, as you know. A lot of people say if you have to have one gun, it should be a shotgun. And that's very wise, and I think that makes sense. And you can never go wrong if the one gun you have is a shotgun. I'm a big fan of pump action 12 gauges, although don't forget the 20 gauge. That 20 gauge is almost as powerful and has less recoil and all that, and sometimes you can get some pretty good deals on 20-gauge ammunition, so don't forget the 20-gauge. But 12-gauge is obviously the standard American cartridge, or I guess shell, technically, for a shotgun. So I'm a big fan in an urban or suburban setting of a handgun. Here's why. It's concealable. And you did a great, great show, probably one of your best, one of my favorites a while ago, I think it was something like All Handguns Suck was the name of the episode.
That's right.
And that's right. And you're right. All handguns do suck when it comes to power compared to a long gun. But they're concealable, and I think that's a big deal. And I won't go into, you know, a lot of detail about the scenario I foresee, but it's basically a lack of law and order, and I think that but a low-grade thing, not zombies and Mad Max and apocalyptic things. So everyday things like when you're going to work, if you still have a job, or you're going to the store, or you're just going around town, I think you're going to be around a lot of really high crime situations, not anarchy and mobs, but just really bad crime. Think of Detroit, and think of living in Detroit, and I think that's what it'll be like. So if you were in a Detroit setting, I guess that's the best way to put it. If you were in a Detroit setting, by the way, in the book, I talk about the Detroitification of America. So anyway, I'm fixated on this Detroit thing. And then they declare bankruptcy. If you're in a Detroit setting, I think a handgun is much more practical. You know, you're going to have to go outside and do something, and carrying that shotgun around is not going to be real viable. So that's why I'm a big fan of handguns. As far as handguns go, I personally love and use Glocks. I'm not one of these guys, though, that says one particular kind of gun is be-all and end-all. If somebody, you know, hates you because you like 1911s and they don't, or vice versa, that's not my style. That's not how I am. But I'm a huge fan of Glocks. They're relatively inexpensive. They are amazingly reliable. And when we're talking about prepper guns, reliability is an absolutely key feature. You can't be running off to the gunsmith and with, say, a 1911 that has, depending on, you know, what kind you get, you know, dozens and dozens of parts, up to 100 parts or something. Glock has, I don't know off the top of my head, 30-some parts.
There is 33 parts, I think.
33, and that's an advantage, and they're built very tough. I love the fact that the magazines are for Glock are relatively inexpensive and are pretty doggone available. There are tons of Glocks out there. You can always, you know, probably find magazines and everything, and they come in all the common calibers. And you know, no, this is not a caliber debate. You know, you've had that. You did another great show, your colleague did too on the 40 versus the 9, which I listened to. But anyway, not a caliber debate. So that would be some handgun ideas. I'm a big fan of semi-automatic pistols as opposed to revolvers. Have nothing against revolvers. It's an ammunition carrying capacity issue and a speed of reloading issue with me, because I think that in the urban settings, the Detroit settings that I foresee, being able to do some magazine reloads rather quickly is important, because you might be confronting or confronted by a large number of people. But then again, of course, you know, accurate, reliable hits are what count, and, you know, the gamesmanship of how many hundredths of a second you can shave off a magazine reload, you know, if you're treating it like a pure sport, then that's not what I have in mind. But
yeah,
so those are, I mean, M&Ps are great. SIG, I mean, F&N, I mean, you just name it. There, I don't think there's really a bad pistol out there. I mean, some folks I know are not enamored with high points, and I've never shot one and have no reliability track record with it, so I have no opinion, but you know, you really can't go wrong out there. So that's the handgun thought. And as I mentioned, I think a shotgun would be right up there. Obviously, shotguns are fantastic defensive tools. The firepower is absolutely amazing, especially with buckshot. And don't forget the slugs, even in an urban setting. A one-ounce slug can disable a vehicle if it's put in the right place, and that might be a very handy thing to be able to do. And of course, you know, birdshot is nice for a variety of things. I mean, it's good for, you know, wide dispersal, but not terribly lethal, which I think can sting and pepper, a large crowd, which might be something you need to do. So there's a use of birdshot that I think is not, you know, talked about as much. Obviously shotguns, especially pumps, are relatively inexpensive. I'm always, you hear me keep coming back to that inexpensive thing, because I think that you need to do a lot of things with the amount of prepping money you have.
Exactly.
Every time there's a couple hundred dollars more you could spend on a gun, I always think about how much food a couple hundred dollars is. And now with, you know, food prices, even though they're higher than they used to be, a few hundred dollars is weeks or months, depending on how you do it and how many people you have to feed. And
that, yeah.
that's a big deal. I mean, that's one of the reasons to have a gun is to protect your food, right? And what? How ironic would it be to have fancy protection for nothing, because you're not protecting anything because you didn't get anything. So that, I'm a big fan of Remington 870s. Mossbergs are fantastic pump shotguns. Again, I don't know really any bad pump shotguns out there. I'm a big fan of a battle rifle. I have a dual personality, a split personality on this. I love ARs and AKs. I guess it's because I'm sort of in the political business in real life, and so anytime I can, you know, make both sides happy, I like to do that. But
well, you know what, Glenn? But, let me ask you to pause for just a minute.
Yeah,
I want to ask you to pause because you said a lot of stuff that I really want to emphasize and I agree with. First of all, when you started off talking about a handgun for urban, suburban areas and urban areas, right on. I 100% agree. I live in the suburbs. Handgun, I think I would rate just even slightly above in importance to a shotgun. Now, what you said about shotguns I like, especially the slugs. Another thing that people need to consider about shotguns is that, you know, the devastation that they can cause at such short distances. The other thing that a lot of people forget is the versatility of ammo. I mean, you can have anything from buckshot to slugs to birdshot to rubber shot and all kinds of stuff that you can have in a shotgun. That's useful. And I want to make a correction on something I said. I was looking it up while you were talking. I was dual-tasking there. It looks like a Glock has 35 parts. I said 33. Now, the fourth-gen Glocks might have 36 because of the backstrap. But including the magazine, there's only 35 parts. I know there's somebody going to correct me. Oh, Bob, you said 33. It's more than that. So I wanted to throw that in there. But keep going, Glenn. So you were talking about the split personality. You like the ARs and the AKs.
Yeah, I like them. I like them both in different ways. If I had to pick one, it would be an AR for a couple reasons. Number one, ergonomics. You cannot beat, you know, where the safety is and the magazine release and how you charge it and the balance of the thing. I mean, they're supremely well-designed rifles. Obviously, they've been in the U.S. arsenal for, I want to say, 50 years off the top of my head. That is pretty impressive, and they've been tested, and the very first generation ones probably weren't very good, and the ammunition was probably no good, but that's you know, 48 years ago or something.
Yeah,
like
exactly.
That. So they're fantastic. And there's a lot of ammunition out there for it. I mean, if there's a bad situation, you're probably going to find 223 or 5.56. You're probably going to find AR mags, you know, compared to other things. And so that's a big factor. Along with reliability and cost, a third factor is availability. And that is often, you know, something that's talked about with caliber choices. Get a 9mm over a 357 SIG, for example, because 9mm is more available. But it also applies to parts and magazines, because, of course, these things don't work without parts and magazines. And I think a lot of folks, you know, who shoot a lot and are thinking about prepping, or maybe active preppers, and I admit I fell into this before I sort of forced myself to rethink this, and that is, a lot of us think that, you know, this probably isn't going to last too long, and golly, I hope it doesn't last very long, but you should be, you know, ready for, you know, using a firearm, and I don't mean shooting it necessarily, I mean carrying it and you know, using it in all the uses for it, you know, a lot, and not being able to for months or, heaven forbid, years, I don't think it'll be years, but anyway, for a long time, to not be able to get parts for it. Another thing that happens is people are cleaning guns or taking apart guns that are not familiar with them. And by the way, if you're a prepper and a firearms owner, you need to be extraordinarily familiar with your firearm, because you'll take it apart and that little spring will go bing and go flying away. And now you've got an inoperable firearm. I actually had a conversation with my teenage daughter, and I said, don't even bother cleaning guns. I'll take care of it. I don't want you taking something apart. And she knows how to put things back together and everything, but still, so that's a factor. So that's why spare parts, because that little spring that went bing, if you can get another one, that's probably a good thing. So those are, and ARs, you know, the caliber thing, the whole 5.56 versus 7.62 by 39, people on internet forums can debate that. For what I'm talking about, urban, suburban sorts of things, close quarters things, 50 yards max, in
exactly.
a lot of settings that I foresee, I think that, you know, all those calibers are just fine. This isn't Afghanistan, thank goodness. We're not, you know, suppressing threats that are 600, 800 yards out. If you lived in, you know, the West and it's ranching stuff, you may have very, very, and there's no cover, you may have very long shots. But you know what? If you're living in, say, Montana and you're doing 800-yard shots, or those are necessary, you're already taken care of because you've already got probably a scoped rifle, a bolt action, and you probably gather groceries at 600 to 800 yards, you know, when you go hunting. So, you know, that's not a factor. So that's that. As far as AKs go, the thing I love about AKs, or two things I love about AKs. One is the reliability is just stupendous, and they are less expensive to acquire and all of that than ARs in general. And the other thing I like is I absolutely love the AK-74. I'm a maniac. I won't tell you how many I have, but I have quite a few of them, and I love them. I got them when they were $450 a piece.
Wow.
And, you know, and that wasn't too long ago, by the way. And the magazines are relatively inexpensive. I really like 5.45 by 39 ammunition because even now, with elevated prices, I'm getting it at 18 cents a round. And, you know, what's 5.56? It's several multiples of 18 cents a round. It's funny, I was contemplating going to a gun class that requires a lot of rifle ammunition. And the Real Live team, who are in the book, as you know, because you've read the book,
right.
They were all amped up, and they said, this is great, and, you know, it's several thousand rounds of 5.56. And I go, well, shoot, I'll just bring, you know, my AK-74, and that's just, that's 3-4 span cans. That's no big deal. And the difference in cost of several thousand rounds between 5.45 and 5.56 was really stunning when you kind of added it up in real life. So that's another thing. The AK-74s are very light shooting, very low recoil. I call them wives and kids guns because, take my teenage daughter, for example, the stock, the standard size stock, I guess the stock, right?
Right.
Standard size stock is, I believe they euphemistically call it European size, which would be for smaller statured people. And my teenage daughter grabs an AK-74. They're light. They're very light. It's about half as heavy as my tricked out AR. And the stock is short, and you know, they can shoot them, smaller stature people. And people who need to hold on to a rifle all day long, maybe they're guarding something or something like that, you really want a light one. You know how that is, that really cool AR that didn't seem so heavy when you were just holding it up for 30 seconds in the gun store. Carrying that thing around all day, boy, it's a different thing. Even with a sling. By the way, the one accessory you absolutely have to have, in my opinion, for any long gun is a sling.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
You will die without it. You will rue the day that you didn't get the sling, but you got the really cool red dot sight.
Yeah.
And so the AK-74 is perfect for that. So it's cheap. It's relatively plentiful. Obviously, it's not as available as 7.62 by 39 or 5.56 or anything like that. There is one downside, of course, with the AK-74, and you know what I'm going to say, and that is corrosive ammo. It's no big deal when you have a bunch of Windex and time to clean within about 24 hours, but the scenario I'm describing is a scenario in which you may not be able to clean the thing. Now, the good news is there's non-corrosive 5.45 by 39 ammunition. It's kind of hard to find right now, and, you know, Wolf and Tula and all of that, and they make it, so I have a bunch of non-corrosive 5.45 in case I need to not clean a gun for a while, which is a really hideous thought, and I really hope I never have to have that happen. And
yeah, but it's an AK. You don't need to clean an AK, do you? Just kidding. Just kidding, Glenn. Just kidding.
Geez, especially with
corrosive ammo.
Corrosive ammo. And so, anyway, those are some thoughts on long guns. And, of course, AKs and 7.62x39 are fantastic, and you don't have a lot of these same, well, you don't have the corrosive issue. It's a little more recoil, a little bit heavier, but a little bit heavier hitting. And obviously 7.62x39 is much more available than 5.45x39.
Yeah, I was going to say something about that, Glenn. You know, you said a lot here, too, and about availability. You mentioned something about that I really want to emphasize. You had a lot of good points here about availability. I think from not just a prepper standpoint, but anybody, I think availability should be probably the top three on your list. And here's what I mean by that. Let me give some real-life examples. Maybe you can weigh in on that. A couple weeks ago, Ben Branham and I did a show on M&P pistols, which in this episode I'm going to talk a little bit more about M&P pistols. The problem I have with Smith & Wesson M&Ps right now, especially the 9mm version, is there's no magazines to be found anywhere. I challenge you to find a 17-round Smith & Wesson M&P 9mm, and if you do, try to find one for less than $50 or $60.
Mm-hmm.
They vanished. Ben was telling me because Smith & Wesson is having a hard time getting magazine springs. So when I look at this and I think, okay, if I'm encouraging someone from a prepper standpoint, okay, other than what I call the Sandy Hook shortage, when have you ever seen a shortage of Glock magazines? Right now, we're after the Sandy Hook shortage. Ammo's becoming more plentiful. Magazines become more plentiful. But M&P magazines are gone. So I have to kind of look at that and be a little critical here of Smith & Wesson and say, gee, nice guns, wonderful pistols, probably some of the most well-built polymer pistols on the planet right now. But come on, folks, you know, you got to have magazines available. Would you agree?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. And that's one of the things, you know, I personally like M&P pistols a little bit more than Glocks. They fit my hand better and a little bit prettier, and they're cool guns. I have an M&P in 22, which is awesome. We'll get to that in a moment. But you're absolutely right. I'm going by here in the Seattle area. I'm going by Surplus Ammo and Arms, which literally has boxes. I mean, big, huge boxes of Glock magazines. Remember when you went to the dentist when you were a kid, and you gotta get something out of the grab box or whatever, the treasure box, and you put your hand in and you got something cool. It looks like a big, huge box, like the treasure box.
Yeah.
And they have dozens and dozens and dozens of Glock magazines. And so, yeah, they're far more plentiful, and that's a big doggone deal. If you have 50 guns, get the kind of guns you want, and this isn't a big deal, but, you know, this is a prepper thing, and availability is key because, yeah, that pistol is worthless without the magazine. It's kind of like mini 14s. Neat guns. Magazines are kind of hard to find, and so they're not...
And expensive.
And they're expensive, so they never took off like ARs. Similar thing. So, yeah, availability is critical. And we saw it even with a Sandy Hook thing, which was, a mini preview of what a bad scenario would be like as far as ammunition and guns and magazines being scarce, and a very, very micro example of what I think would happen in a bad situation with availability. And look how bad that was. So, you know, people should learn. I think a lot of people have. Of course, you and I went through the 2008/2009.
Yes,
you know,
we did.
And all of that. And, you know, I learned something, and I just kept little bit by little bit stocking up on magazines. I have at least 10 magazines for every handgun. I have at least 10 and probably closer to 15 magazines for every long gun. I have several pistols and long guns, so there's several multiples of those numbers. And I just get a couple here and there. Pick up Glock magazines, for example. You know, I had about $20 or $25 or whatever in my pocket, and would go and get one slowly, methodically, getting them. Same with ammunition.
Now's the time. Now that the scare is over a little bit and ammo and mags, except for M&P mags, are becoming more popular or more plentiful, now's the time to use the Glenn Tate theory. Just start grabbing one or two here and a couple boxes of ammo here. You'd be surprised how quickly you can accumulate it.
You betcha. And every time you go shooting, you know, try to get twice as much ammo as you ended up using at a minimum. we haven't even touched on training, which I'll just mention, you know, training is absolutely critical in this. I was saying if you've got a few hundred dollars and you can get like a slightly cool gun or food, you know, think about the food. Well, don't forget the training in all of this. And training takes, you know, different forms. It can be training in classes like yours, or it can be going to the range on your own and spending ammunition money. But that's pretty critical, the training. But and so kind of back to the prepper batteries, so we've gone through handgun, shotgun, and battle rifle. I think a 22 is a terrific thing. This is more of a rural thing. I guess it's still a good thing inside a city, but I think it's more of a rural thing where there are, you know, little animals and little pests to control and all that. One of the neat uses, I think, of a 22, of either a rifle or a pistol, is practice and training. You know, it's funny, after the 2008-2009 scare, when I could not find 22 long rifle ammunition at all, there was zero, as you remember, and there's, you know, recently been zero out there, I started, you know, accumulating a brick at a time, and then I got an AR in 22, an M&P 15-22, which is a superb, wonderful, wonderful 22 in AR, and I also got the Smith M&P pistol in 22. So I've got an AR and a pistol in 22, and I can practice all day long to my heart's content. I think the 22 ammo I got was about 3 cents a round, and so for 3 cents a round, I can stay proficient. And that's really critical because I think that in a bad situation, 22 ammo, first of all, will become currency, barterable. It'll be like change, right? It's like nickels. If an AR round is like a dollar and a 22 round is like 5 cents, probably closer to 10 now, it'd kind of be change. But keeping yourself proficient with the 22, I think, would be important. And I don't know if it's in book 6 or coming up in book 7. Sorry, I can't remember. But the usefulness to a large group who's training of 22s for just this very purpose is described at length, and I think it's illustrated. And people would say, "Oh boy, that would be important to do." So don't forget the 22s. There are a million good 22s out there, both rifles and pistols. So you know, pistol, shotgun, battle rifle, and 22 of some kind, I think, is a pretty nifty four-gun prepper battery, and of course you can expand from there. But
I think you're right. You know, in fact, what I did, mentioning 22s, what I did is I got both a 22 conversion kit for one of my ARs and a 22 conversion kit for one of my Glocks, and I really like it.
Yeah, I really wish I would have got a conversion kit for my Glock, because then I would have my same trigger pull and it would truly be practicing with my Glock. There weren't any for the longest time, and maybe there still aren't any 22 conversion out there for Glocks that I could find. And then I thought, well, what the heck, I'll get a whole new pistol, because, you know, it's the M&P, because it's nice to have a whole new pistol. It's useful. It's useful for a lot of things. So the trigger's different, and different holster and slightly different feel, but I'm not going to worry about it too much, because it's trigger time is trigger time, and safe handling is safe handling, you know, even if the ergonomics are slightly different.
Yeah, by the way, you were talking about ammo prices earlier. I don't know about up there in the Seattle area, but down here in South Texas, 223 is back down to about $6 for a box of 20.
Oh my! Okay.
Yeah, it's back down to about $6, maybe $6.50. If you look around, and I'm seeing 22 ammo. I'm seeing 22 long rifle on the internet for about $150 for 1,000 rounds. So that's coming back down. 15 cents a round. I know some of you people are thinking, "Oh gosh, I got 5 cents a round 22." But lately, what we've been through, 15 cents a round is not bad.
You know, and I'm glad you brought that up, because I like saving money, and I was just describing, you know, how those couple hundred bucks could be a couple weeks or months of food. But I think people need to get ammunition now. I mean, when it was really ridiculously high priced, it probably didn't make sense. But, you know, sort of like with stocks, dollar cost averaging, you know, you buy a little bit, you know, continuously, and the price goes a little up and a little down, but over time it averages out. You know, the worst thing would be to be caught in a bad situation with no ammunition, because you wanted to save, you know, a little bit of money. So I guess moderation is the key. When ammunition prices are high, don't go bananas and buy a ton of it, but please buy some.
Exactly. Don't go bananas and buy a ton, but just get a little bit here and there. I like what you're saying, you know, just little by little. And if you do it little by little, you'd be amazed. You'd be amazed what you'll collect if you pick up a box here, a box there, a magazine here, and a magazine there.
You know, and I have to give a plug for Ammunition Depot, who's a sponsor of mine. That's just the coolest thing ever. I just can't even believe. You want to talk about unexpected, you know, coolness coming out of things. But, you know, and there are other online ammunition retailers, too, but there's some good prices out there on bulk. I mean, you want 1,000 rounds of 5.56 or something. You want to really, you know, get a fair amount of it. You know, now's a good time to do it, and you'll feel much better about having it. A good friend of mine is a recent prepper and a recent gun owner. I call her the soccer mom because she's a soccer mom. And she went from being a suburban soccer mom that thought guns were kind of yucky to pretty, you know, intense prepper right now. And she was describing to me how much better she felt and how much safer she felt having 1,000 rounds of 5.56 for her new AR as opposed to just a couple boxes. So, you know, definitely, in my view, get a decent amount and then, you know, keep doing the boxes here and there. You know, do both. Do all you can. So, yeah, those are some thoughts on ammo availability.
Yeah, well, your sponsor, Ammunition Depot, looks like they've got some pretty good prices on 223. Looks like 1,000 rounds. Yeah, I mean, and it's available, too. I'm looking at some of their prices. They got a long list, and we don't have time to go through them all. But they're coming down. The prices are coming down. Here's XM193 55-grain metal case boat tail. Good stuff. Federal Lake City for $10.
Yeah.
You know, it's back down to reasonable. It's not a dollar a round like it was after the Sandy Hook scare.
Yeah, exactly.
So,
exactly. And, you know, if you can reload or you have friends that reload and you guys can all get together, and, I mean, primers and powder and projectiles are hard to find now, too, but don't forget the reloading. Now, it's not viable for most folks. I you know, my team reloads, and we reload as a group. I don't have the time to do it, and I couldn't rely on myself to do it. I probably, you know, would buy all the stuff and not get around to doing it. So it doesn't work for everybody, but it is something to maybe think twice about now in these situations. Because ammunition prices are pretty high in general.
For those of you that say you can't find 9mm, Ammunition Depot's got it available too. See, that's the thing. We're starting to see availability come back nicely.
Yeah.
So,
yeah. And that's been really nice. It's funny, you know, earlier I was saying, you know, 223 is about a dollar round. He said, well, it's actually, you know, a lot lower than that. And that's because I just saw around the Sandy Hook time when the price spiked. And since I've been doing little batches of ammunition for years and years, I didn't buy any ammunition recently. I mean, I haven't bought any ammunition in a long time because I haven't needed to. I mean, all of my routine training has been with a 22. And so I'm kind of out of touch with what prices are. So, I mean, that's a good problem to have, right?
Yeah, that is a good problem. Well, I like your – I want to cut this one off. We might do a part two, but I like your idea. I concur with it. You know, a handgun, a shotgun, a battle rifle, and a 22, and you're pretty much set. And then plenty of training and plenty of ammo.
Yeah, and don't forget the training. Don't forget the training.
Well, now you're kind of digging into deep water there, Glenn. You know, there's a lot of people that will argue with you and me on the training. I mean, just go to the Gun Rights Radio Network forum. You'll see a lot of argument on that.
Oh, well, that's surprising to me. And training doesn't have to be formal training. I mean, it should be somewhat structured. I mean, if you're just goofing around at a gravel pit, that's better than nothing, obviously. But familiarity with your weapon, I mean, the safety advantages alone of being very, very familiar with your firearm is really, really important. And knowing how to take it apart again without that little part going bing and flying around, I mean, all that's kind of important now, but it's going to be even more important if things get really nasty and we turn into Detroit. So, yeah, you gotta do that. And doggone it, shooting's fun. Don't ever forget that. I'm sure you don't. But
I don't. No, it is fun. You're right. It is. And I mentioned that in one of my episodes. I said, you're missing out on the fun of training, if nothing else. Going out there and practicing stuff that you can't normally practice on a square range is just plain fun. I don't care if you think you need it or you don't need it, or I don't care if you think you'll never use any of that kind of semi-tactical stuff. It's just plain fun.
You know, and that's certainly true. And there's another part of training that I always sort of forget about, but it's important. Let's say you got a chance, you're a regular average guy out there, and you got a chance a few times a year to go out and do some pretty rigorous gun training. I think that's pretty standard with most folks. And you might say to yourself, well, you know, I'm going to go 3 months in between doing this, so I'll lose all my muscle memory and I won't, you know, remember this to keep my knee at a 15-degree angle or whatever it is. Well, you know what? That's not really, in my mind, what the training's about. To me, it's the confidence of having done something once. I mean, if I roll around in the dirt and I'm shooting from an odd position and I've done it once, well, you know what? If I have to do that shot in a pinch, I'm not going to be, I don't know, this sounds funny, but true, I'm not going to be afraid of, you know, hurting my shoulder or tearing my clothes or getting dirty. I'm just going to say, well, shoot, this is how you do it. You get down and you take the shot and you do it this way, and here's how you do it safely. So, you know, having done something once gives you a lot of confidence to be able to do it again. It's like when you're driving somewhere, when you're going there for the first time, it seems like it takes longer, and when you're returning, it seems like it doesn't take as long. Well, once you've done it, it's not nearly as much of a big deal. And we're going to be, I think, unfortunately, in situations where it's really important that we don't hesitate and that we just do what needs to be done. And so if you can do the odd positions and the rolling around and maybe things that are physically strenuous now, you're going to be a lot more confident and react more quickly, and it could literally save your life. So there's another aspect of training that I don't think gets the attention it should.
Very good. Very good. Thank you. I never thought of it that way. Well, Glenn, as we wrap up, take a couple minutes, talk about your book. Book 6 is out, The 17th of Regulars. Go ahead. I want to give you a chance to plug your book.
Well, thanks. It's a 10-book series. As you mentioned, books 1 through 6 are out now. The extremely short version of the story is it's about me, but don't worry. It's not like I'm talking to people about my feelings. It's not my diary or anything like that. It has hundreds and hundreds of characters. And most of them are real-life people, by the way. I wrote this thing, as I mentioned earlier, not thinking anyone would read it, because what are the odds that a guy would sit down and write 3,200 pages and, you know, get published? I mean, the odds are that wouldn't happen. So I put a lot of detail in there. I have a job in the state capitol that allows me to see things on the political and to some extent economic level that other people don't get to see and experience. And so I wrote about how a collapse would happen, a partial collapse where a bunch of inflation and a bunch of other bad things, not a total, you know, end of the world collapse. And so it's about that. It's about my wife, who is very reluctant. She's now in real life much better about this, but in the book and certainly at the time, very reluctant to it. That's an important feature that's really resonating with people. A group of guys, I call them a team, and you've read about them in the book.
Yes.
Get together, go out to where my cabin is and form up the community out there, and we do it in a very subtle, gradual way. Instead of showing up with a bunch of, you know, body armor and ARs and saying, "Hi, we're the guys with the gun, so you got to listen to what we have to say." That's an extremely bad approach. And I go into some detail about that. Then it describes how the community starts getting a little bit organized to take care of each other, and how most people are decent and take care of each other, but there are some bad people who don't, and there's a way of dealing with them. And it's not just all shooting people either. I mean, it's, you know, I think very realistic and very humane, because that's how I want things to go, if I can possibly have it happen that way. Then there's some good guys who come out to the area and form up the 17th Irregulars. Most people know what an irregular unit is, sort of a guerrilla thing.
Right.
And then the books in the later in the series describe how the good guys slowly but surely go against the bad guys. And throughout this, there are people, they're changing, they're confronting their normalcy bias. Some of them you know, are struggling with all these things. But it's probably 85% about people and how they react to things, about 10% about guns and action and things, and about 5% about prepping. So it's really about human beings, because I think that's the most important part of it. So, and it's the most interesting part too. So that's what it is in a nutshell.
Well, I 100% agree. Glenn, thanks for coming on. Folks, Glenn Tate, best-selling author, 299 Days series of books. Awesome. Glenn, thanks for coming in and weighing in on Guns for Preppers.
Thank you. You know what? Folks should buy the books on your website through your Amazon affiliate network, by the way.
Yes, handgunworld.com, my Amazon store, or my recommended books page, either one. Both of them work. And buy Glenn's books. It helps me out, helps Glenn out. And feel free to do some other shopping on Amazon if you want, if you're going to be buying stuff anyway. I'd appreciate that. Glenn, thanks for coming on.
Thank you so much, Bob.
All right, take care.
Well, thank you, Glenn. Appreciate that. As I'm cruising here in my Handgun World mobile studio, this old Honda that I keep driving that just keeps on going and completely paid for, that's the best part about it, I got some thoughts about the interview that I want to share with you. I hope you have at least one of each of those firearms that we mentioned. A good handgun, a good shotgun, a good battle rifle, and a .22 of some kind, either a .22 rifle or a .22 handgun. After the interview, I got on the internet and purchased 500 more rounds of CCI Mini Mag, .22 long rifle. The price is coming down. It's not as bad as it was just a few months ago. So I increased my stock by 500 rounds of that. You know, that's the kind of thing that we often sometimes overlook, and a lot of you I know have stocked up very well on .22 ammo, because you've told me my stock isn't good enough. I think I'm only at about 12 to 1500 rounds. Now, I should be okay for a while, but with this recent order, that puts me at about 12 to 1,500 rounds. My Glock conversion kit that converts my Glock 19 to .22 long rifle is working great. Advantage Arms, good stuff. I got to find some higher capacity magazines, some more normal capacity. The ones I got were only 10-rounders. I need to get some more normal capacity magazines for that Glock 19 .22 conversion. I have not had a chance to start shooting my CMMG conversion for my AR-15 yet. That converts it to the .22 long rifle. I'll be doing that over the next 30 days or so, and I'll give you my initial impressions on that and maybe do a review on that. I can tell you now, after about a 500-round trigger job on my Glock 19 Advantage Arms conversion, flawless. Flawless. What I really like is I'm shooting basically the same gun that I carry most of the time, my Glock 19. That's what I like about it. Pretty much the same trigger, the same grip, the same feel, the same manual of arms. All I got to do is drop the same sights on it. I'm still using the Glock factory sights that come with the Advantage Arms kit. My opinion, that's the best training you can get. That is, if you're not going to train with the caliber that you'd normally carry. In other words, I normally carry a Glock 19. If I'm not going to train with real 9mm ammo, I think the same gun converted to a .22 with that kit is the next best thing. When I took point shooting progressions with Roger Phillips at Suarez International, I shot most of the first day with my .22. With my Glock 19 converted to .22. And that was very beneficial because I was able to still continue to learn the techniques and train, but save a little bit of money on ammo. And I get feedback as to where my rounds went. The only thing different is I'm not getting the same recoil impulse. But the next day, I switched over to 9mm and solved that issue. I would strongly suggest if you have a pistol that can be converted to .22 long rifle that you get a conversion kit for it and practice a lot in that configuration. Now, the next thing I want to say, and this will be pretty much the end of the show, I want to talk more about M&P pistols. I got an email that said that the interview I did with Ben Branham was not complete, and he's right, it's not complete when I covered M&P pistols. I probably should have called that episode M&P Armorer's Course review. Because it wasn't as much of a review of the M&P pistols as it was a review of Ben's M&P Armorer's Course. So, let me talk more about M&P pistols, what I know about them. First of all, there's a couple versions we forgot to cover. First of all is the CORE version, C-O-R-E. That stands for Competition Optics Ready Equipment. Competition Optics Ready Equipment. What's really cool is Smith & Wesson is putting out M&P pistols that are already, the slide is already cut to put an optic on it. You can put Trigicon on there and Insight and Seymour and several different types of optics. It's already drilled and tapped for that, so that's what's really cool. You don't have to modify your frame. And you can run the gun with the optics or without. The CORE pistols come with what I call suppressor sights. They're taller sights so that you can co-witness them with whatever optics that you have on the pistol. So that's kind of neat. They're sending them out, the CORE version. They also have the Pro Series. The Pro Series seem to have better triggers. Everyone that I've felt seems to have a little bit better trigger than just the regular series. And the Pro Series comes with a fiber optic front sight. It comes in 4-inch or 5-inch. The 5-inch is very popular for IDPA and USPSA production pistol competition, or IDPA stock service pistol competition. Very, very popular. Very popular. I remember when I shot the Texas State IDPA Championship. When I shot in that match, I can't remember if that was 2010 or 2011. That was 2010. Gordon Carroll won that stock service pistol. He won the state championship that year, and he was shooting an M&P Pro. That's the gun he was shooting, M&P Pro in 9mm. And boy, was he good. I was on his squad. He is good, which is why he won the state championship. So if you really want a cool competition gun or even a cool carry gun, you know, they come in factory configuration in the Pro Series. What I like about that is even though the gun is a little enhanced versus the regular pistol, it comes from the factory that way. So if you're going to carry it, you can say that it's in factory configuration because it does come out of the box that way, whether you got the CORE or you have the M&P Pro. There's another version called the Viking Tactics or Viking Tactical. What's really cool about that, I had a chance to go to Dury's Gun Shop in San Antonio several months ago, and they had one. They had an M&P 9mm, 4.25-inch barrel, and it was the Viking Tactics version. Now, what's really cool is the flat dark earth color. The whole gun is the flat dark earth color. Grip, slide, everything is an FDE. First of all, that's cool. Looks great. You got the Viking Tactical sights. Now, what's really neat about the sights is you got, it's pretty cool. You got a bunch of dots in it. They are a little bit busy for me. I kind of, too many dots on that thing. You've got your tritium. You've got your regular sights up on top, and you got your tritium below that. So, you know, you've got the night sights and just the regular white dot sights on there. To me, that's kind of a little busy, and they're pretty tall, so my only concern about that would be, you know, make sure that when you use a holster with that, that the holster has a large enough sight channel so that your sights don't rub on the inside of the holster. But it was a cool gun, can't deny it, and the trigger seemed to feel a little bit better. Now, the best I could tell on Smith & Wesson's website was that the trigger's the same as the standard models. Maybe I misread that. I don't know. But to me, it felt a little bit better than the standard trigger. Again, the only complaint I have about M&P pistols is the out-of-the-box trigger leaves a little bit to be desired. As I mentioned in that interview with Glenn earlier in the show, I got a real problem with them not having a good supply of 9mm magazines available. I mean, the fact that you can't find M&P 9mm 17-round magazines, and if you do find them, they're super expensive. There are Glock magazines everywhere, XD magazines everywhere, of course, 1911 magazines everywhere. Almost every gun store right now has a good supply of Glock magazines of all calibers and XD magazines of all calibers. But those Smith & Wesson M&P magazines, especially in 9mm, have vanished. 40 calibers everywhere, but not 9mm. Now, you know, if someone's buying a pistol for the first time, and they're buying it right now, if you really like the M&P and it works for you, great. But as Glenn mentioned in the podcast, you know, he has at least 10 magazines for every pistol. So do I, at least. 10 magazines that will work in my pistols. Correction. I don't have 10 Shield magazines, and I don't have 10 Car PM9 magazines. But for all my Glocks, I got 10 magazines, minimum. Well, how are you going to get a Smith & Wesson M&P right now in 10 magazines? Two come with a gun. Good luck finding the other eight. And if you do, get ready to pay some serious, serious cash. So for people that like to be able to purchase things easy and inexpensive, come on, Smith & Wesson, you got to fix that problem. Fix the problem, and everything's cool. Don't fix it, not cool right now. That's pretty much my opinion on that. But I got to hand it to Smith & Wesson for putting out the M&P pistols in so many different configurations. The core configuration, competition optics ready equipment, the Pro Series, and the VTAC, Viking Tactics Series. Pretty good stuff. Plus this, you know, then they've also got your regular standard M&P pistol. And their pricing is good, so hats off to them. I understand they're winning a lot of contracts. I understand they're very close to winning a contract with the Army, I believe. And a lot of different police forces are switching over to the M&P. And rightfully so. I can understand why they're doing that, because it's a fine pistol. And, you know, the other thing that Smith & Wesson does right is they do produce their polymer guns with thumb safeties. Now, I'm not a big fan of thumb safeties. Don't like them unless I'm shooting a 1911. I don't like them on polymer guns. Some people do. Some agencies require that. Some military outfits require that. So that's good. Smith & Wesson is very smart doing that, putting those out with the ability to have a thumb safety on it. Magazine disconnect? Fooey on that. In my opinion, don't buy an M&P pistol with a magazine disconnect safety. And the way you can tell is on the slide, on the right-hand side of the slide, it says capable of firing with a magazine removed. It's printed very clearly on the side of the slide. If it says capable of firing with the magazine removed, it does not have a magazine disconnect safety. Of course, you could always double-check to make sure it's unloaded, eject the magazine, and press the trigger. But in case you don't want to do that inside of a gun shop, all you got to do is look at the slide. I think they should make them all that way, you know. Forget the magazine disconnect safety. A lawyer prevention feature, or a lawyer repellent feature that I don't like. Stupid. Anyway, just my personal opinion. I know some of you are probably going to trash me and give me all kinds of reasons why a magazine disconnect safety is a good thing. And a lot of people say, well, Bob, it's a lot safer. You know, if someone's trying to get your gun away from you and you eject the magazine, they can't use it. Yeah, but if they're skilled in getting your gun away from you, if they're skilled with gun grabbing, you're not going to have time to eject that magazine. And then they have a gun that will work, and they'll be able to use it against you. I don't completely buy that argument. And why take the chance? And by the way, you know, what if you get your gun back? What if you're in a scuffle and you do pop the magazine out and you get your gun back? Now your gun's useless. Now it won't fire. Now what good is it? Now it's nothing but a club. So there's always two sides to every story, in my opinion. With all that said, I wanted to throw that extra info in there about M&P pistols. Looks like I'm going to get a chance to shoot an M&P N40 pretty soon. And I can't figure out which one I'm going to get. I am going to get an M&P pistol. It's most likely going to be an M&P 9 compact again. Maybe the full size, but I think it's most likely going to be a compact, because what's really nice is it's halfway in size between a Glock 19 and a Glock 26. And I like that. Thanks for listening to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm an everyday guy. I'm Bob Main. I'm your host. The reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Remember, the loudest sound that a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Give every pistol you have a 1,000-round trigger job and shoot straight and shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye. Okay, false ending there. I realized after I stopped my recorder, I didn't talk about the usual announcements. Go to handgunworld.com. That's all I'll say. You'll see all of our classes posted. You'll see information about the Shooters Club, which is really starting to ramp up nicely. And as a matter of fact, we just put up a really nice video. Even though it's long, it's a very informative video on how to make hits while you're moving and shooting. So check that out. And don't forget about my Amazon store. And that's pretty much it. I don't want this show to be too commercial, but I had to put that there at the end. Handgunworld.com is your resource for everything you want to know about what's going on with my training classes, my podcast, the Shooters Club, Amazon, everything. Thanks.